sound over here.
Good morning.
I can hear Debbie.
Hello? Yeah, can you hear me?
There.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Just one quick announcement this morning. We are going to have a short board. We will have five board members present, four in commission chambers, and Ms. Liebman is joining us via Zoom. With that, I know Jason Jacobson from the city attorney's office is here, and he will make some announcements this morning. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Today's meeting of the Historic Preservation Board has been scheduled in a hybrid format with members of the Historic Preservation Board physically present in the commission chamber at Miami Beach City Hall and applicants, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting, members of the public may dial 888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 817-4834-7488 pound, or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 817-4834-7488. On an item, must click the raise hand icon if they are using the Zoom app, or *9 if they are appearing by phone. Individuals who wish to provide testimony or submit evidence in person may appear in the commission chambers on the third floor of Miami Beach City Hall at 1700 Convention Center Drive. If you are appearing as on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist at the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You do not have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness, providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance to express support or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representative of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principals on whose behalf they are appearing. If you are an architect, an attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether or not you are appearing in favor or against an item, encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. And before I turn it back over to Chair, staff, you ready to be sworn in? Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jace. Debbie.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have a relatively brief agenda today, so the first order of business this morning is the approval of the June 15th minutes. You all did receive a corrected version of those minutes this morning. There were corrections made to item 6 and 7, reflecting board members Litt's absence. So we would need a motion and a second for that.
Who wants to do that?
Move it.
The motion was made by Mr. Litt. Did I hear correctly? Okay. Thank you. Do we have a second?
I second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Ms. Liebman, did you vote on the minutes? Do we have Nancy Liebman with us?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, I voted. You didn't hear me because
yes.
I was mute. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, the motion passes 5-0. Thank you. We do have two requests for continuance this morning. The first application is HPB 200445. This is 306 Lincoln Road. This is for a certificate of appropriateness for the Lincoln Road signage district. The applicant is currently working with staff to refine the design, and they would like the application to be continued to the September 13th meeting. Staff has no objection to this and is recommending that the board approve the request for continuance, but we will need to open it up to the public prior to making a motion. Mr. Chair, can we open it up to the public at this point?
Sure.
Okay. Do we have anyone on Zoom wishing to speak?
I hear a beep.
There is one attendee on Zoom, but I think he's for one of the applications. Mr. Tony Leon.
Tony, if you don't want to speak on 306 Lincoln Road, you can put your hand down and we will get to you when your item comes up. Is there anyone in commission chambers that wishes to comment on the request for continuance? Seeing none. You can close the public hearing.
We can close the public hearing. Moving on.
You would need a motion
to approve
the continuance.
Let's make a motion. What? Okay, you want to make a motion? No? Okay, Max.
Yeah, motion to continue.
I'll second that.
Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Wow, Nancy. Okay. You're a real presence from heaven. Okay, that carries.
I will be back the next time for sure. You don't have to worry about whether I'm here or not.
We love you in any form you take.
September. Okay. I miss all of you. I do.
Okay. We miss you too.
Thank you.
That application was continued to the September 13th meeting. The next request for continuance is HPB 200440. This is 550 Washington Avenue. The applicant is requesting a continuance to the September 13th meeting. They would like a full board to be present during the presentation of their application. Staff has no objection to this and is recommending the board approve the request. Is there anyone from Zoom?
Mickey Marrero is on Zoom.
Mickey, are you with us?
Good morning.
Good morning, Mickey.
Good morning.
Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, members of the board, yes, Mickey Marrero, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Debbie is correct. We've been working to make some minor changes here and modify this a little bit and discuss with staff, but also we do want a full board. And frankly, a lot of our team is out of the country today. We were hoping to present last month, so we will be very happily before you in September, if that pleases the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Mickey. Okay, shall we have a...
I'll move to continue to September.
Anybody want a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Great. That motion passes. The application was continued to September. The next application on the agenda this morning is HPB file 190352. Jake, do you want to...
This is for 1116 Ocean Drive. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for the introduction of a glass elevator structure within the courtyard of the building.
Okay. I'm sure the board members recall this application. It was originally presented to you at the May 11th meeting. At that time, the board requested that the applicant go back and take a second look at other potential alternatives, and the possibility of relocating the elevator within the envelope of the building. Since that time, the applicant has presented alternative options. They have explored. They have also outlined the reasons why they don't believe that those are the best options for the property. I would note that the property is a very small hotel. There's very few units, and creating an elevator would require the demolition of the floor plates and would take up area within some of those units. Staff has also noted that we believe the exterior elevator located in the courtyard is a lower intervention in the sense that it does not require any demolition of the building. It doesn't require any structural reconfiguration of the building. And we believe it is the least obtrusive in terms of potential harm or threat to the building. We are also supportive of the design, which is transparent. I think what we talked about last time as well is the need for vertical accessibility. While this is a historic building and is eligible for state waivers for some of the vertical accessibility, They are not proposing a fully compliant accessible building or an elevator. What they are trying to do is enhance the accessibility. And with that, staff is recommending approval. I know the applicant has prepared a presentation to go through some of the items that the board asked them to take a look at. And that is all I have. But if you don't have any questions for me, we can turn it over to the applicant for their presentation, and then we can turn it over to the public.
Be happy to.
Good morning. For the record, Alfredo Gonzalez, Office of 333 Avenue America, with Greenberg Torg, on behalf of the property owner, VMSM LLC. And I know, and I'm here with, also today with the architect, Ari Scalar, who to do the follow-up presentation.
Alfredo, before you begin, may I swear on your team?
Sure.
Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Yeah, I do.
And are there any ex parte communications to disclose? Thank you.
There you go. So I know that we were back here last May, and we gave a presentation on the elevator we were proposing. As Debbie mentioned, this is not a fully accessible elevator, but will provide accessibility in many forms to the rooms that have never had it. Other than, I'd note that back in the 60s, there was an elevator with an elevator shaft installed in the courtyard. It really was very intrusive, taking out the bell tower that you see when you were coming to the property. I also wanted to note that we took the board's comments to hand and had the architect and structural engineers take a look at where other it could be located. And I will go with, through the presentation and show you that this is really the most non-intrusive area to locate the elevator. And as Debbie mentioned, because we're not doing any demolition, we're actually removing just the landings, the railings that could be done administratively. This is not an application that has demolition that requires the five votes. I wanted to point out that this building has reached its 91 years. So obviously it was built in 1930, and we were very concerned about creating any openings through the 91-year-old building, and then obviously, the history of Versace in the 90s, he restored all the rooms and restored the property, and also the value that is, that the ownership and the community has on keeping those materials and the rooms layouts. So with that, I would like Ari to go through the presentation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Good morning. I wasn't sure if this was working.
CJ, okay. Can you put up the presentation?
Yes.
Sorry, PJ.
Is everybody on the board now, was also in the last meeting? Okay. So if you recall, we were proposing a glass elevator on the east side of the courtyard in a corner that is not visible when you come in from Ocean Drive. So you don't see it until you turn around and explore the whole building. If you can go to next slide. This is a rendering view. And here we have, from our last presentation, we have the proposed floor plans and how it would be affected, how it would look with the elevator on every single floor. You'll see the round glass elevator in the corner. As Alfredo said, we placed it there, and we only have to take out a railing, and we don't have to destroy the railing. We keep it, and we can put it on a display somewhere for safekeeping for the building in the future if it's ever removed. Next slide, please. Thanks. So this is a blow-up of the actual elevator, and the idea, if you see the two... Is there a pointer or anything? No. Okay, so if you see adjacent to the round elevator, which again, the majority is glass, there's two angled pieces going up, up to the side and down to the side. So that our design was to make it a glass railing, so it's with the same materials as the elevator, and so that you know it's new and modern and it wasn't from the original. Next slide, please. So here's our analysis of what we did in studying other locations, which we had done previously, but as far as from our last meeting, the board brought up a few other locations, so we said let's study it. We saw if there was anywhere at all that we could use along the hallways near a staircase or anything, and it didn't work. It blocks the entire hallway. You can't get through, so it's not safe for egress. Then we looked at inside the rooms, and I'll go through another. We have the other slide, right, with the marking the areas, Adina?
Yes.
Okay. And because of the everywhere it could fall, it interrupted everything that Versace did. So many decorative materials, symmetrical designs. It negatively affected everything that Versace did. And also, we're concerned about now we're going through the building and affecting the structure, detrimentally affecting the structure, and we don't know what we're going to find, and what else could happen. And finally, the courtyard, the west side of the courtyard, where there used to be an elevator. If you can go to the next slide.
Yeah, the next slide is done with all the...
Okay, so if you look at the red squares where we highlighted number one, number two, number three, and we have it for every floor. We looked at different possible locations. Number one highlights the first areas we were looking at, near a stair, near the hallway, near something else mechanical. It didn't work. It affects columns more. It affects egress. Number two is the office area, and it would block the doorway in the office, but worse as you go up to the second. Next slide, please. As you go up to the second and the third floor, it blocks entrances to the suites that the people come to stay as if they were living like Versace in the building, and getting a feel for that. And it blocks the entrances, and it blocks up all the aesthetics from the rooms and the Versace designs. And honestly, and you, there's pictures there that you can see the elaborate design that is in every space in the building. And if you go to the next slide, you see the same number two. It affects even worse that upper suite on the third floor. And number three, actually, that was the location of the original elevator. And the client originally brought to us and say, hey, why don't we put an elevator here? And then we looked at it and said, wow, that couldn't make sense. And then we didn't really know the history. And as we researched it, we were like, well, then they take away the bell and they block the observatory, the view of the observatory as you're looking up. And in dealing with staff highly encouraged us to look at another location. And with staff's recommendation, we found the location that we're presenting today with the round glass elevator, both that it's glass to make it as see-through and modern as possible, so it's easily identifiable that it's not an original piece to the building, as well as it's hidden away. With that, the rest of the presentation is the same, the package that you have. These are the new 3-4 sheets that we use to study where we could put it. Along this, we spoke to a fire consultant, structural engineers, everything, and this is what we're respectfully requesting your review and approval today.
So with that, we conclude our presentation just for rebuttal after the public comments. Are there any
Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, and I'm here for any questions.
Okay. Should we open to the public?
Sure.
Okay. At this time, if there's anyone on Zoom wishing to speak, please raise your hand. Okay, I do not see anyone on Zoom, so we can turn it over to the public in the chambers. Thank you.
Good morning, Daniel.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. Daniel Serrato here on behalf of Miami Design Preservation League. And this item did come up previously, and it's one of those few where we differ with the board, but we support the staff in this regard. It is a very complicated building. If anyone's been to Europe and seen, I mean, elevators like this, that's how they adapt buildings. Unfortunately, though, a lot of the European buildings, they actually did have other spots, other pockets, closets, etc. This particular building, the way it was designed, was a little bit of a revival style. I don't know if they ever really thought of different things like that. But, you know, I understand there has been concern, but we like the fact that it can be undone as well. You know, I mean, that's a big part of preservation. So other than telling them, no, you can't do it, like some of the members said for the tents, you know, I mean, these people do have to survive and evolve. And I don't think this particular design is so incredibly offensive. I also wanted to mention just a historical point that in September 1980, Andy Warhol took a tour of the Amsterdam Palace given by Barbara Kapeman and Diane Camber, who would go on to be the head of the Bass Museum. So we have a lot of great photos of Andy Warhol in the courtyard, and that's all on our blog as well. And we look forward to the continued preservation of this building. Thank you.
And Daniel, do you mind if I swear you in?
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Do you swear all the testimony that you gave in this proceeding and will give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, seeing none. Okay, the comments closed. Moving on to board discussion. Who would like to discuss? Okay, all right.
Thank you so much for going through the studies. I think it's extremely important. Last time I actually thought that this was a good location. You know, nothing is ever perfect when you're trying to adapt buildings in historic preservation. It's very difficult, especially when you look at accessibility. But I do think it's important to provide that experience to as many people as possible. So thank you again. As Daniel mentioned, you know, reversibility in historic preservation is key. And I think this solution provides, you know, kind of the best of both worlds. And I think last time, too, we mentioned that there wasn't going to be any elevator pit, so not only would it not structurally damage any of the slabs, but also the floor itself, which is extremely important. So I'm in favor of this proposal, and thank you.
Thank you. Who would like to go next? Max.
Thanks. I had a thought on the alternatives analysis. This may be more of an internal thing for staff, given that the board likes to understand the thought process for alternatives, if it's something it would be helpful in the initial presentation, because clearly the alternate locations were something that the team thought about, but the board cares, you know, about the thought process and the planning on it too. So that was part of the reason, I think, for this continuance, that it wasn't clear kind of what the evolution was that led to this location. I'm supportive of this one. I think the photos were helpful. Really shows the detail to support the alternatives and why the location that you landed on is the one that works best. I'm a little bit dubious about the location of the alternatives in our submittal. I don't think the board was suggesting to put them in the middle of 3-foot hallways, but the point comes across in the photos of the rooms and why, you know, that's really not feasible. So all in all, supportive. Thanks.
Thanks, Max.
This is, I understand. I think everybody's in a dilemma here. I don't like it at all. It's a building I've always liked. It's a building I've experienced quite a bit, excuse me, prior to the Versace-ism of the building, which I probably don't agree with all of it or much of it. respect Ari quite a bit. I just don't like this thing at all. And just looking at it now, you know, I don't want to be here as the armchair quarterback. When we talk about reversible, this is not going to be reversible. If anything, this would somehow grow, maybe, to become more massive. You're not going to reverse ADA accessibility. You know, you're not going to do something like that. And in looking here, in my reference to saying I don't want to play armchair quarterback, but I look at your number three option, and I wonder, you know, could it have been moved over to the right, as I'm showing here? And sure, it would force some reconfiguration of some interior spaces. I'm also wondering if I come here and I'm wheelchair bound, sorry, I feel constricted here. If I come here and I'm wheelchair bound from Ocean Drive, I've got a bunch of steps to maneuver. Is there a device there that takes me up?
There's a ramp. Speaking of the mic. There's a ramp, Barry, on the north side of the building.
Okay.
That you can get up to the courtyard.
Got it. Has anybody looked at those devices that can be put on a rail, on a stair, and take a person up? I mean, this isn't going to help someone, you know, if EMS has to come and get somebody out on the second floor who's wheelchair bound, who's not able to walk. It's not going to support a gurney.
Right. In my experience, the ones that go on the stair rails is typically one shot.
So you'd have to get off at each landing.
I don't know how it would work, and up and up and up and up,
right.
And it takes a lot of space up too, and
they're bulky.
They're bulky, and the stairs aren't that wide, so.
Yeah, I just look at this and see it's a conundrum. It's a
difficult situation. Yeah, it's a difficult.
And just wanted to answer one of your questions. Although we look at it as reversible, and initially the owner was looking at a permanent elevator, and realized that would be fully accessible, but the size and scope of something like that would then create demolition and much more of an intrusive, no matter where it was located. So he scaled it back to something that provides some form of accessibility. I know it's not 100% answer, but it will, for the first time, allow greater accessibility into any of the second and third, you know, the rooms, which today have none. So.
And I looked, I walked up and down and around, and there's levels, and I tried to find another place, but in working with staff, they said, look, this is the best place that they feel it is, and you know, went along with that, and it seems to work, you know.
Does somebody to use this mechanism require a special wheelchair to sit in?
No.
Or it fits a regular
Not that
standard?
I know of, no. You can't turn, the wheelchair can't turn around,
right.
But it can get inside. It can get inside. By the way, the elevator company that we've been talking to is called Liberty Elevator. And they're from New York, and they did the Vessel elevator, and they're doing another special one near Grand Central Station. I forgot what it's called. So they specialize in unique custom elevators.
Okay. But had you looked at that corner?
We looked at all different places. If we look at a corner, I guess the idea was that the corner that we're proposing is the most hidden corner. You know, you don't see it when you come in. It doesn't hit you in the face when you come in from Ocean Drive. So.
And when you look at the historic research report and you see the photos from 1960 when it has the elevator shaft that goes. So as you walked into this courtyard, you immediately
right
lose the bell and you see this box that's clearly added on. There was a masonry box where it was a full elevator. I think that was the concern that staff raised about anything along that. What would be the western edge of the courtyard? tucked away in the eastern, where you have the entryway and it's you have the brick, you could come in and almost not notice it unless you completely turn around.
Well, I think you come into that space and you kind of like, wow, you know, you look all around. You know?
Right.
I mean, that's how that space affects you. So, yeah, it's not the first thing you see. So, okay. I don't mean, it's just difficult.
Okay. Are you done?
Back yeah, I'm done. Okay. Thank you.
Nancy. Sorry.
I missed a part of the conversation two months ago, was it? I was there, but I couldn't be there the whole time. So I recall that elevator shaft, the original, I think it's the original, was in, you walked into the, you're calling it a courtyard, whatever it is, and the elevator was in front of you, like most elevators are, and you got on the elevator, and there wasn't all this distraction that I'm hearing now. I don't understand what, when did the center elevator get lost in the shuffle? And all this new glass elevator discussion begin. I just like a little background so I can understand it.
Sure.
Because I never found a problem.
Nancy, I can explain to the board. So prior to when Versace purchased the property, prior to his use of the property, it was a elderly housing property. And I believe area sometime in the 1960s,
yes.
An elevator was introduced that when you walk in on the western wall of the courtyard, that was introduced right in the center, and it was built out. So, in staff's opinion, looking at those older photographs, which I believe were included in your previous package, we believe that did have a serious adverse impact on the architectural integrity of the building and the courtyard. That was removed by Gianni Versace when he converted the property into a single-family home. As a single-family home, vertical accessibility is not, for a good number of people, not a requirement, not a desire to have. So then, you know, with his property, there was no elevator. There was no need for him to have an elevator. And so that's where we are now. We believe that removing that center elevator was a benefit to the historic integrity because it was not original. It was a later intervention in the 1960s that we did not believe was very sensitive. So the idea of this kind of smaller, modern structure, similar to what they have in European restoration adaptive reuse projects, as well as I know Ari showed last time the elevator in MoMA, which is a very similar structure. You know, staff did believe that this, you know, was a light intervention and would help to increase accessibility.
And Nancy, it's Alfredo. Just wanted to clarify something you said. When you recall this as before it was Casa Casarino, I forget what the previous name was, and it was a rental apartment back in the 80s and before Versace purchased it, the actual elevator was not when you first came in. You first arrived into the courtyard, and the elevator was all the way at the end where you see the bell tower. They removed the original bell. It was Versace who acquired another colonial bell from the 1800s from Philadelphia, which is what's there today. The original bell was removed when they built that elevator in the 60s. So that's why we stayed away from that western side and tried to, I know nothing is invisible, but tuck it as away as possible from your first sight of the entering the courtyard.
Betsy?
No, I mean, I understand it. I can't picture the glass round elevator stuck away in a corner for an I don't know. But if everybody thinks that this is an efficient way to handle it, I have no problem.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Okay, my turn. Some questions first of all. I just want to go over this disabled person issue. I'm all for ADA and disability. I think it's very important. However, it's a big however, and it's stated in the Secretary of Interior standards as well, that if something is of such import that a change to it would unalterably affect it in a negative way, that it can be waived or other arrangements can be made. I guess I need to know first, how do disabled people get in there now? I mean, are they carried up the steps, or they can only live on the first floor, or they can't be there at all?
I mean, the rooms are not accessible, so...
None of them.
The rooms start on the second and third floor.
Okay.
So there's no rooms on the ground floor. So, and because it's a historic 91-year-old building, it does have its waivers, but over the years, the ownership that restored it and has brought it back to very active use, they've had inquiries over the years of people who would like to stay in the rooms. And when the question comes up, there are narrow stairwells, so it's not very accessible.
Okay. Gotcha. How do people now get from, I've been there many times, but I don't know exactly where the small steps, changes in level are. How do people get from the courtyard through, not the little bar, but through the like French doors to the terrace, their steps there? How do they negotiate that entrance? Or they can't use that entrance to die?
Well, they would. I think the accessibility comes in through the front. You're going to the front courtyard when you first arrive to the property. Before you enter through the doors, the wood doors, you could go left and get straight to the courtyard from the rear.
With no change in level.
I believe so. There's no change in level, right?
No, there's a change.
There's a ramp. Okay. I'm just asking.
Change in level everywhere.
Through here to get, if you want to ramp up here,
I just remember when last time I was there, I had to go down some steps.
No, there's steps everywhere.
Yeah.
From what I know, there's a wooden ramp on the north side.
You just answered one of my big questions. There are steps everywhere. Okay, moving along, there are other issues. How long has the building operated without an elevator? You're saying since the 80s?
I'm sorry.
How long has the building operated without any elevator, since the 80s?
Since, I guess the elevator was removed when Versace purchased it and turned it into a single family home, so that would have been the 90s.
So in early 90s, late 90s?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you have 10, 20, so 30 some years it's been operated without.
Well, it was when it was operated as a home. After it was a home, it was a private club for a while. It went through several iterations.
Without an elevator, it's been about 30 years.
Right, because when it was a private club, it was really focused on having private events. So the courtyard, that was the area.
But there are disabled people who go to private events and private clubs, so it doesn't really matter what it was used for.
Right, but there was more limited access to the at times the upper level, the second and third floor that are the rooms, were not always available, guest rooms.
The another issue that I have with it, I've been here 5.5 years, and I think at least, I could be wrong, but I think at least 4 or 5 times, either this owner or previous owner, I don't know the ownership history, have come before us with proposals to change various and sundry things. One was the tent-like structure over the garden where they have the restaurant. One was a tent-like structure over the entire courtyard. One was changes to the design of the courtyard structure. So first it could be seen from the street, then it couldn't be seen from the street. There have been quite a number of changes. My question is this. I'm frankly getting a little tired of seeing this come up for some change, which is not a small, which are not small changes, every year or two, it seems. And I don't know where this ends. We're here to try to maintain the architectural integrity and the historicity of the building itself. And each time these changes are approved, in my point of view, it lessens the entire package. These are not positive additions toward the preservation of the building. They're chipping away. And that's my main problem. There's, other than this board, there's no protection I see here for the building basically in perpetuity. I would be a lot more sanguine about the ownership's changes if there was something like a permanent easement or something given to MDPL or some other group to make sure that the building was preserved and these things were scrutinized more thoroughly than just having seven people who do change and can be the attitudes of a board like this can be changed over a number of years. And that to me speaks sadly about the future of the building, because if you've got several people who did not appreciate the building, they could very easily approve something that would be much worse than this and change it. And, you know, the attorneys are always on the side of the people who want to change things. They're rarely on the side of preservation. And this change you're proposing to me, as I see it, is a convenience. To me, conveniences don't require us to change the character of a building and to change physically the building. You have waivers or whatever you legally want to call them for people who are disabled now, but this, as Barry said, once this is built, it's never going to go away. I mean, you're not going to disability it 50 years from now, probably, unless some other method comes up that's going to enable people to get upstairs. As he says, it's a real conundrum. I'm all for disabled people. I mean, I was disabled for some months last year, and I couldn't climb steps, and I couldn't do things. And I do have a feel for what that is like. God forbid it's not permanent. But on the other hand, not everything everywhere can be accessible. And if it's gone for 30 years or more the way it is, I find it very hard to accept a change like this as being okay, even on a temporary basis. I travel all the time, and I've been to many buildings like this, and I've seen many glass elevators and many things tucked away in corners, on the outside, in the back, and all sorts of other things. But to me, this is the most important building in Miami Beach. Other people might argue with me, but I think everybody in the world knows this building. And I think to change it in any substantial way and call it temporary is basically just not true. I mean, it's not going to be temporary. It's a permanent change, unless some new technology comes. But I just see this as another step down the road. The owner's going to come back next year with something else, and the year after with something else, and eventually it could be unrecognizable if a board like this changes and approves things. So I really worry about the sensitivity of the owner and the sensitivity of this board towards something that each individual change may not be disastrous in and of itself, but to me, cumulatively, it's a problem. So I'm really at a conundrum, because I really feel for disabled people. They should have access to every corner of everything, in my humble opinion. But we're not the disability board, as I've said. Like, we're not the economic development board. We're here for one specific purpose and try to include other things in, but our purpose is preservation. And I think this courtyard is so important the way it is, and I just have trouble with it. I mean, if one wanted to be technical and a purist about it, one could say that the Versace changes are not original to the building either, so therefore, why should they matter? I mean, where do you draw the line? And the line has to be drawn somewhere, and it's up to us to try to determine where that line should be. I know I'm preaching, but it's kind of soothing for me, because I thought about this since it came up the first time, and it really, really bothers me. If I could vote neutral or not vote for it, that's what I would do. And not vote for this motion in any way. I don't want to vote against it, because to me it seems that's not fair to some people, and I don't want to vote for it because I just don't like this this change in this particular building. You know, remember, people use Europe as an example. Europe has thousands of these buildings. So putting an elevator in a corner may not be disastrous for one building in Europe. But we have precious few. In fact, I think there's just basically one like this. And I think we have to be very, very protective of it and not nibble away at it. And that's why I think a preservation easement or something to really preserve the building, not just leave it to this board. I worry about this board in future because the commissioners can appoint people who may not be as interested in preservation as I am, or Barry is, or some of the people who are here now. And these buildings would be in big trouble. So that's where I'm coming from. It's not you. It's not the building in particular. I mean, it is the building in particular. So I just don't know what to do. I agree with Laura, and I agree with Barry, and I'm kind of in the middle like Nancy most of the time. So I don't know what to do.
But
yes, Nancy.
Nancy is now not in the middle. After listening to all of this, I realize exactly what you're saying, Jack. I am handicapped. I have to use a walker. I can't get into every building that I'd love to see, but I would rather see us actually preserving, especially the original building. The additional building that we built later on, I don't think there's a problem with this, but I would rather see us keep the building. And you're right. It seems to me every year that I've been here, we've had something. First they put a tent, then they put some kind of other impediment that didn't fit. I really didn't think it through as I spoke earlier. And Jack, I agree with you more than I ever have. As usual.
It's oh, my blessed today. Thank you, Nancy.
So, I agree with that. And I take back my minimal acceptance and hope that we can do this for other buildings. There are other buildings in the city that deserve to be treated better than just trying to fix up something that the owner decides that they can do so that they can make more money. I don't know why they keep changing. So that's me.
Okay, thank you.
Mary? I have a couple questions. Is the elevator leading to second and third floor ADA upgrades to the suites?
The suites are very big.
Renovating the bathrooms? ADA compliance in the bathrooms? Roll-in showers. I mean, what is this leading to in that sense?
The showers are existing. Toilet, most sinks. Most of the rooms have a tub and a shower, I believe, and the showers are quite large. But we're not doing. We don't have any plans to do other ADA improvements in the suites. But I haven't asked them, no.
And are the existing ground floor public bathrooms, and this is what I keep kind of closing my eyes and trying to remember, and how you said, well, there's steps all over the place. Are those just flat from that? You know, I see from the outside terrace courtyard, there's steps that lead up. Mm-hmm. Once I'm in that courtyard, do I just walk flush to those bathrooms? Now?
I believe there's a step into the bathrooms.
That's kind of how I remember. but I
think there's one step. And generally, from my understanding, I have a
Just Nancy. So
Nancy, say something.
Goddess has spoken. Well, yeah, she looks cool when she speaks. She's above you.
I understand that a person in a wheelchair, one step, they can be lifted up or down.
Yeah, sure. But it's not accessible.
But not the bathroom. That's what I'm in a bathroom.
And what we're doing is
the elevator doesn't necessarily, you already have access to the courtyard because there is that ramp that's on the north side that someone in a wheelchair could come up the ramp. It's not the most convenient way, but there is access to that ground level. So the area that historically had been used for commercial purposes through the previous owners, there was access. What this elevator is doing is extending some level of access to those who may want to occupy the rooms.
I was specifically asking, were those, you know, two things. Did the owner plan to further redo those rooms upstairs with grab bars and roll-in showers and that? And more specifically, or more importantly, were those existing ground floor bathrooms currently accessible? And I didn't think they were, and I think
I understand that they have a portable ramp. It's a wooden one. They keep it in the closet, and when somebody needs it, they bring it out to, you know, to traverse that step when they have to go to the restroom. And I believe there is a toilet stall on that level that is accessible, I believe.
And I also wanted just to add to some of the comments from the board that I understand, and the current ownership is the one that's come to this board several times with different application. Understand that prior to their ownership, there were a lot of problems with the previous owners. There was several that went to foreclosure, and the current owner has been able to take the property and preserve it and has a lot of value, not just in the historic 1930s building, but also the Versace addition, and has painstakingly attempted to preserve the rooms where the rooms were not within the purview of HVB. They, if you go there, they're just like when Versace and a lot of the furniture had to be reacquired and brought in because things moved over the different levels of ownership. And they tried to make this, and they've been able successful to turn it into a building that, as you said, Mr. Chair, at one of our hearings, it's one of the most photographed buildings in America. And because they have restored it, brought restaurants and accessible to everyone, and even during the worst of times, you'll have people coming to the restaurant just to see the building. And it's visited not just at the steps where the infamous murder occurred, but throughout the building. And the times that have come to this board is how to continue that sensitivity of preserving the historic building, of not just the contributing portion, but the Versace side, but also making it redeveloped where it could be maintained. And I understand that we came, and I was the attorney representing the owner at the time, the original canopy that was going to be built by the terrace was going to break into the structures, the non-contributing buildings, but it was going to be a much more impactful construction. We were permanent, and I remember the comments of the board, and the board did not approve that because of that sensitivity. And what they have always tried to do is now come back with things that if they had to be removed, they could be removed and have minimal. I know the canopy that this board approved the last time, it's a freestanding. It's a plug and play. So if at one point or a different owner that had to be removed, it wouldn't have any impact to that mosaic, the famous mosaic with Medusa. And that's the same thing we look at the elevator. It's a way we could continue to redevelop this property and make it available to the masses who want to be able to maybe stay at the hotel, clearly dine at the restaurant, and accessible as much as possible. It's not going to be 100%. That we're not suggesting, and the client is not going to rip apart the bathrooms that were very intricately done in order to then take away what you want to see.
Thank you. Okay. Any further board discussion on this? Max?
Another thought. I found that the board concerns very compelling, and they're grounded in real experience, not just here, but, you know, in other, you know, other historic buildings in the city. The piece that just it makes me uncomfortable is using past exclusion as a rationale for continued exclusion on this. And if this is, minimally invasive intervention that can, you know, provide some access to people that haven't been able to experience, you know, these rooms, I think that on the net, that's a good thing. But I think there's a softer point that we, this erosion of the historic integrity of not just here but elsewhere is something that presents a risk, and it's something that I think the board has to keep taking seriously.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Okay. Do we need a motion, I guess?
Yeah, there needs to be an action taken by this board. You have the option of approving, denying, or continuing.
Well, I think continuing would be probably an exercise in futility, because they say they've gone through every alternative, which I haven't been to every room in the building, so I can't judge that. But there is that whole wing on the west side that I've never been in. Maybe something could be done there. There's no example of it here. But I think to make them look further, I'm not sure that would be productive. And again, I am very, 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 very torn on this, because I've seen elevators just like this, and they do work. And they do carry people up, and they're accessible. I do think Barry's right to a point that, God forbid, you should have someone who has a health issue and they need a gurney or ambulance crew. I think getting in that small space with all that stuff would be very difficult, if not impossible. But I'm not an elevator expert, so I can't speak to that. But I'm at a conundrum. I like. The building just the way it is, and I really worry what Max said is very telling. One shouldn't use past history and people coming with ideas as a negative. Things have to grow and change. That's Laura's, I think, mantra. I agree with that too. So I agree with people on all sides of this discussion, and which makes it very hard to give a yay or nay for this. I frankly don't know what to do, but I'm not leaning toward it. But I would hate to not sleep at night because I denied someone access. That really bothers me.
I don't think that you have the board, approval to go forward here. And I know Jack saying that a continuance may be not worth it. If the applicant would feel in that direction. And I would make a motion to continue if the applicant doesn't feel that they've explored every option available, and then that's it. Then I would make a motion to deny.
I'm happy to respond. We'd obviously request the board not to deny this. The alternative, we have to get another continuance. But I do want to respond to a statement that Mr. The chair just made. That Versace addition that is built off to the side, there are different levels. So if you had an elevator there, you could access that new addition.
But you couldn't ask us.
But it wouldn't help you with the rooms.
I shouldn't have brought that up.
No, but I mean, so
looked at that, okay. And there's a stair right in the middle that's,
doesn't
connect. It's complicated.
If anybody would want to come to the site, I mean, we documented it in images. There's no clear area where you could go three floors up without having some kind of detrimental effect. And that's not even what Debbie mentioned, and we talked with our structural engineers, that the potential to really impact the Casa Casarina that was built in 1930, by going through and drilling holes and putting a tube through floor plates that have been there since 1930. So that's why one of the reasons when we looked at everything, that was a big concern, and I know staff was concerned that if whatever you think about the Versace additions, which I can tell you the current owners appreciates and has been painstakingly at every level.
I don't mean to criticize.
No.
Form, because it's just as much a problem to them, and it's much more in dollars than it is to me, and I'm not a vested in party. I'm just interested in trying to preserve the building as best as we can.
And they look, and their assets throughout Miami Beach, they are long-term property owners. They own about 15 properties throughout the beach, entering buildings from different areas, not just Ocean Drive. And I'm sure they are looking forward to when this celebrates its 100-year anniversary in 9 years, which nowadays seems to be like a snap shot away. So if the board doesn't not want comfortable approving this today, I really would request then continuance to allow full board and us to further explore, and also invite any board member who wanted to actually physically not just see the pictures, but go room to room and see how there's really no other place to put it.
Okay, let me ask Debbie a question then. Do they have the right to now ask for a continuance based on the board not being full because they think they might be able to get votes?
Of course.
Oh, they can. Okay.
Yes. Okay. But it's up to the board whether you want to continue it or not.
Okay. Would anybody like to make any kind of motion?
I'll make the motion to continue to, I guess, the September.
Could we do October? That would give us
October,
time.
Fine with me. Continue to at least the October board meeting.
And that would be October 12th.
And to my mom's birthday. And to come with
Columbus Day.
More sensitive alternatives.
Perfect. We're continuing to Columbus Day. Which is perfect.
Yeah, that's perfect true. Improvement, that, right? That is
and
true.
Talk about historic significance. Sorry.
But it's not politically correct anymore.
Yeah. Well, nothing is anymore, but okay. I mean, that's what the House was modeled after.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
I second.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion? Oh, Nancy, are you?
We need Nancy. The motion is to continue to the October 12th meeting.
Can't hear you, Nancy. Can't hear you.
Take yourself off mute.
Can't hear you.
Okay. Now, I think that we have beaten this one.
Yeah, I agree.
As much as it can go. We'll come back. The only advantage would be we'd have the rest of the board, and they would be able to express themselves. But the more I think about it and the more I hear the reasons why we need to alter that building, the more I am opposed. So,
okay. So
I'm opposing it now.
Okay. And I vote no.
Okay, let me take the roll on that. So the motion was to continue to the October 12th meeting. Mr. Litt?
Yes.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
No.
And Mr. Finglas?
No.
Isn't it a majority for continuance?
That is correct. There is I believe Jason can check that, but I believe it's a majority of the board members present that for a continuance. So that would be, we have 3 yays and 2 noes.
Thank you. And I'll reach out to...
Just if we could pause 1 second, let me just confirm that.
I think you're right, but let me just confirm that as well.
And if this comes back, it's very, it's obviously very tight. It's an uphill battle, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It's an uphill battle.
And we understand
and I wouldn't
that.
Want to be on the other side of this dais.
And we'll reach out to each member, individual with the concerns from today and the last meeting, and maybe meet at the site and they could see the site. And if at the end of the day the board still feels that way, then, you know.
Well, I can say personally I'd appreciate if you don't reach out to me.
Yes.
I would, you know, I just don't like that communication. But I will visit the site on my own and snoop around, look around. But I just don't like the communication between myself and the applicants.
Right. And, is it something that the city – as a group, can we set it up as a group?
Because no,
I know to get in, they're occupied.
It's a sunshine. So what what we could do, Mr. Klein, arrange a day you can go, because you need access to the room so you can see. And we'll respectfully just have someone walk you into the rooms and arrange that so a day that the rooms are occupied. and it'll be minus the applicant, the architect, and myself, so you won't be intruded on. You'll be able to...
I'll arrange that, coordinate that with staff or
okay,
make them aware of whatever I'm doing.
And that's fine.
Yeah, and I'm happy to do that. I can confirm that that motion passed. The application has been continued to the October 12th meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. We'll move on to the next application, which is HPB 210462.
This is 326 Meridian Avenue. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for the partial demolition and renovation of the existing rear accessory structure, including the construction of a one-story rooftop addition.
Thank you, Jake. So this is a... currently, this particular property is being used as a single-family residence. It was originally constructed as a duplex. It was constructed in 1934 and designed by Carlos Chappelle in the Mediterranean Revival Art Deco transitional style. In 2010 is when it was really converted to a single-family home. I was actually involved in that project. That included the restoration of the front building and a two-story addition at the rear of the front structure. Alterations were also made to the rear accessory building, which originally functioned as a garage. At some point in the future, the original garage use was discontinued, and that structure was converted to a guest house. I will say that the project that was completed shortly after 2010 was a really fascinating adaptive reuse of the existing duplex structure, and it also included a significant amount of resiliency components, which at the time we weren't seeing a lot of people doing in the city. There are solar panels. I believe they have water reuse as well in the structure, so it's a really fascinating kind of case study in not only adaptive reuse of a historic building, but also incorporating resiliency aspects. So this current proposal is primarily focused on the original garage structure, the one-story accessory building, which the applicant is proposing to construct a rooftop addition above, convert back the original garage use at the ground floor, and they are also proposing rear yard improvements, including a swimming pool and vehicular access to that garage. Staff is very supportive of the proposed project. It will require some demolition of the original one-story accessory building. We would note, and I know there were photographs in the package that you received, that this existing one-story structure has been altered over time. We were not able to identify any original historical photographs or plans of the building, but it is relatively utilitarian in terms of its design features. So we have no objection to the scope of demolition or the design of the rooftop addition, which is very modest in comparison to the maximum allowable FAR and height that can be built on the site. Staff has only one very minor concern with regard to the concrete paved area, which is located at the rear of the accessory building for the vehicular access. We are asking that to be modified to include more pervious area and limited to just wheel strips for the hardscape in that portion. Other than that, we think it's a great project, and we're supportive of the application. I believe the applicant and the applicant's architect are joining us via Zoom. This is Tony. Tony Leon, would you like to give your presentation to the board, unless the board has any questions for me? We can turn it over to the applicant.
And before we begin, can I swear on the applicant team? Once we confirm they're here?
Yes.
Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. I'll put 10 minutes on the clock.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm actually on vacation, and I'm in the mountains, the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, so I only have a few minutes actually to speak. So I would rather, I think that Debbie kind of put it all out there, and just in an effort to save time, I'm just here for any questions or concerns or anything I can clarify or help you understand. It's pretty straightforward, single family residential, you know, addition to the structure in the back that's been modified. If that's okay.
You've gone silent.
So, from what I heard, Tony would like, he's available to answer any questions.
Oh, okay.
The plans are before you, so you have the visual materials. And if the applicant has nothing further, Mr. Chair, we can open the public hearing.
Okay. Is anyone in the public?
Thank you, Debbie. Exactly.
Anyone in the public who would like to comment on this project?
I do not see anyone via Zoom who would like to comment.
They close the Zoom and open Daniel.
Yes, hi. Thank you. Daniel Serrato on behalf of Miami Design Preservation League. Our committee reviewed this project, and we did have some questions about classifications, you know, as far as that building on the city database, the front building is contributing, but the back building, I think, is it unclassified? So we wanted to ask the staff about that. However, assuming that the back building has been altered and is not classified, we did agree with the staff report recommendations that we find the new design to be compatible with the front building and with the overall aesthetic. And hopefully Tony's having a good vacation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. Any more public comment? Okay, seeing non-public comment. Who is this? Sorry?
His connection.
Oh, okay. Seeing no further public comment, I guess public comment is closed. Let me go first this time since I'm always last. I looked at this project and I hadn't heard what Debbie said, obviously, before. These people seem to be very avant-garde in their approach to sustainability, and they have, I think, a great design sense, and I'm very excited to see something like this in a building in the back of a contributing building. I think it's really quite elegant and nice and functional, and I see overall no problem with it, so I'm very excited for them and hope it goes forward. Thank you. Who next would like to go? Let's do it backwards. Nancy.
No, I have no problem with this. I think that it's a fine idea. Glad to see that it's not adding a tower or any of those sort of things. So I have full support.
Who wants to go next?
I agree. I think it's very elegant and love the concrete. I do, you know, anytime resiliency can be integrated successfully in Miami Beach with historic preservation while adhering to our, you know, pretty strict guidelines, I'm all for it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Not much to add that hasn't already been said. Support the project as well for all the reasons. I agree with staff's recommendation about the parking area, if that could be included in our approval if it goes that way. And only other minor detail, I appreciate the preservation of the existing canopy tree. So, thank you.
Perry.
I have no comment.
Okay. So we need a motion.
I'll move it.
Okay. I'll second it.
Okay, I will call the roll. Mr. Litt?
Just to clarify, does that include this? Its approval with staff recommendation?
Ms. Liebman, was that to approve with staff recommendations?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Finglas?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes. The application is approved. Thank you.
Moving right along.
Moving to the next application, HPB 210464.
This is 1506 Collins Avenue. An application has been filed requesting to change the classification of the existing building from non-contributing to contributing in the city's historic properties database.
Thank you, Jake. So this is an existing building constructed in 1962, designed by Don Reef and Associates. It is located within the Ocean Drive, Collins Avenue Local Historic District. The current local classification for this particular property is non-contributing, and its current classification in the National Register District. This is within the Miami Beach Architectural District, listed on the National Register of Historic Places, is also non-contributing. Going through some of the history, which I think is important to talk about to the board, in 2000, the Miami Beach National Register Architectural District was updated to extend the period of significance to 1950. In 2013, it was again extended to extend the period of significance to 1965. During the 2013 request that the National Park Service approved to extend the date to 1965, I was not able to find a thorough database of actual reclassifications. There were several contained within that request, but it does not appear that during that National Register update process that the city or the applicant, it was a private applicant that requested that, did a comprehensive review. Taking a look at this particular property, now they're not asking to change the National Register classification, but the local classification, staff does believe that this meets the minimum criteria. Again, it was built in 1962, so it's well within our expanded area of significance for the National Register District. It does contain certain elements that are very consistent with the post-war modern style of architecture, which is a significant style within the city's historic districts. That particular style did have a contribution on the architectural and historical development of this particular area of the city. We did note that there is one thing in particular that we don't believe is consistent with the character of the district, and that is the open parking, which actually is slightly below grade. However, we do believe that in the future, with the city's resiliency initiatives and private property adaptation, that that area could actually be converted and adaptive reused to be more resilient and actually also be more characteristic of our active pedestrian urban streets. So we do believe that this meets the criteria, and we are recommending that the board approve the request for reclassification.
I have a point of order question, and it's going to open a can of worms, but the can should have been opened long ago, in my opinion. The federal government, Department of Interior, I believe, has a sliding scale of 50 years of age for inclusion in National Register or District or whatever, which would mean that would, if you subtract 50 years from 2021, that goes to 1971. There are many buildings included, would be early 1970s building like Dulles Airport in Washington that is a National Historic Landmark, even though it never fit the 50-year number. I'm just at a loss why in Miami Beach or in the state of Florida, there's so many different standards, apparently, of age, and why can't it be more regularized? I mean, if the National Register uses 1971 now as the year, whatever that means, why are we arguing about 1961, 1950? There seems to be so many different dates related to certified buildings, historic buildings, this, that, and the other thing. Why can't it be made simple for the public and use one sliding date for everything? And why can't we be flexible and go along with the federal government? Why did we choose, like, the 40-year certification?
That's a completely different thing.
I know,
thing.
But these are all
so
arbitrary.
It is very complicated, and it is flexible. The national standard is 50 years, but there are exceptions to that. The local, in terms of our city review, we do not have a minimum age requirement. So that is not the board, you know, it's well within your jurisdiction, regardless of the building's age, to take a look at what can qualify as a designated site, structure, or district. So the city doesn't, you know, the city, in terms of our historic preservation ordinance, isn't bound by any specific date or does not have to justify the significance of a property if it's less than a certain number of years old. The National Register varies from that, too. When the architectural district was designated, it was the first time that the buildings, that a district was designated by the federal government that did not meet that criteria of 50 years. Those buildings were younger than 50 years in 1979. So it is always flexible, and I think the flexibility actually strengthens preservation. So, you know, we don't have a date. The federal standard has a guideline of 50 years, but that guideline can also be varied. And I think Ms. Berman Weinstein would like to say something.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, when we look at historic districts, it's a period of significance. It's not just the 50 years. So it has to, that 1965 date probably fits within, you know, the end of MIMO style, for example. So
another reason I asked that question was because it's coming up in a little while on a different subject.
Yeah.
So, and for certification, there's no set date either then, local city.
We don't have certification. We have designation. For local designation, there is no set date.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, moving right. I didn't mean, the reason I'm asking is because I think this building in particular does really satisfy a lot of the requirements at this point in time to be considered as important. It may not have years ago, but things change.
And I see the applicant is here.
Hi.
Good morning. Emily Balter, Brookhardell, Fernandez, Larkin, and Tappanez. Offices at 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. I'm here today on behalf of VSACE, the applicant and owner of 1506 Collins Avenue. I have a presentation. I will be brief. If we could pull it up, please. Thank you very much. The request before you is an application to reclassify the existing structure from non-contributing to contributing within the local Ocean Drive Collins Avenue Historic District. Next slide, please. The property is located, it's a mid-block lot fronting Collins Avenue on the west side. It's approximately 8,800 square feet in size. There's currently a four-story structure on the property. If you could please go to the next slide. On the ground floor, there is parking, as well as a small restaurant, kitchen, and a courtyard cafe in the front. The hotel lobby and offices are located on the second floor, as you can see from the bottom drawing on that page. All guest rooms are accessible from an open-air catwalk on the north side of the structure. And they're accessible from staircases on the west and east ends of the building, as well as an elevator on the northeast corner. If you could please go to the next slide. These are the existing elevations, the north and west elevation. The north is on the top. You can see the exposed catwalk, as well as the staircases. If you could please go to the next slide. These are the south and east elevations. On the east elevation, which is the front facade, the bottom drawing, you can see the driveway access to the ground floor parking, as well as some of the architectural articulations along the front. Next slide, please. This is the Miami Beach Historic Properties Database excerpt. As you can see, the property is the only light blue shaded site on the west side of Collins Avenue. It is the only structure not classified as contributing. Next slide, please. The structure contains a number of the classic Miami modern style features, or MIMO. The curved overhang along the ground floor, as well as the full facade with balconies that wrap around to the north elevation some of the eyebrow moments, especially on the upper floors, as well as the catwalk to access the upper floors and the guest rooms on the upper floors. If you could go to the next slide, please. These are additional photos of the existing structure. The applicant is proposing interior renovations and cosmetic updates at this time. If you could go to the next slide. As many of you are aware, the property is in the MXE district, which is the context is hotels, apartments, restaurants, retail, and many of these structures have those Miami modern MIMO features, which is consistent with this building. Next slide, please. The history of the site, in the 1960s, this was the last vacant site. As you can see from this aerial photograph, there was no building, but the area was developed. Next slide, please. In 1962, the MIMO-style building was built by FB Corporation. Don Reif and Associates were the architects and engineers of record. The general contractor was Giller and Freed Construction Corporation. The next slide, please. The original building was 27 apartment units. Next slide, please. In the 1990s, the then owners constructed the terrace and cafe area. Next slide, please. By the early 2000s, the site was converted to hotel and kept the ground floor cafe restaurant use. The last update to the interior rooms was in 2014. Then the site went into foreclosure in approximately 2019, and the applicant purchased the property in 2021 this year. The existing building is significant to the character of Collins Avenue and warrants reclassification to a contributing building. The definition of contributing provides that a building can be considered contributing even if it's been altered over time, if the alterations are reversible and repairable. The structure and its context, as well as its location and its scale, its workmanship, all contributes to the local historic district's sense of time and place. Also, the most significant architectural elements are intact and repairable. The structure is representative of the original architect's, Donald Reif's, Miami modern style. The building, we believe, yields valuable information relating to the history as well as the development along Collins Avenue. Next slide, please. So on the side of preservation today, with staff support, the request satisfies the code's criteria for reclassification.
It says you can't have a lawyer without him.
You're unique almost.
The structure is of the iconic MIMO style, and it's in harmony with the context of the neighborhood. The applicant is eager to continue to bring their boutique historic style operation to this site. Our team is available for questions. I believe they are all via Zoom. I'm happy to introduce them, but that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for a most enlightening and welcome presentation. I do have one question, though. It's like I'm of the opposition. I'm not. Oh, you didn't mention, I mean, we're very happy, but you didn't mention the purpose or the reason for your request for reclassification. We're thrilled, most of us, I'm sure, but I'm just curious.
So the applicant, as part of their style, as part of the product that they deliver to their hotel guests, is these historic buildings. It's in line with their branding. They have some other hotels, boutique-y type hotels, south of Fifth, on Ocean, so it's consistent with their branding. There's no harm in doing so. It was a pocket.
Of course not.
Yeah, there was a pocket. They have no intent to demolish this building or any major renovations. Everything proposed is cosmetic. Practically speaking, there are some ADA leeway. The site is accessible. There is an elevator. There are staircases. There's the open-air catwalk, but it does bolster an application if the site doesn't meet the stringent requirements of the Florida Building Code. There's some tax benefits. If they do apply for those, there's no application currently to apply for those, but the Miami-Dade County does give you a 10-year tax break for the value of renovations.
Thank you. I'm thrilled that you come to us today, personally. Thank you. Okay. Any...
Yes, Mr. Chair, if we want to open up the public hearing, I do see Weber Studio with their hand raised.
That is our architect of record for this
Tom,
project.
Is that Tom Weber?
Yes, Tom Weber is the architect.
Tom?
It is. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I just wanted to say, Emily, thanks for the presentation. I don't have anything else to say because it was all perfectly said, and it's been a real pleasure working with this group, the Casa Brand, Jose Luis Aguera and his team of hotels, and the South of Fifth, Casa Sobe, Casa Ocean, Casa Collins, and this is our fourth installment. And they are absolutely after exactly what Emily was saying. It's part of their branding. They love the historic Miami Beach hotel buildings, and that's what they're selling. They like to keep it and improve it and make it stick around for another 100 years. So if you have any questions for me, I'm here. I'm remote, but I'm available.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I see Stephen Advokoff.
He is our historic preservation specialist on the team.
Emily, was your team sworn in?
No.
I was going to swear in everyone at the end just to make it easy, but we could do that now. If you don't mind, we could bring...
Sure.
Tom and Stephen.
We should have on the line Tom Weber. He's the responsible for the design of the project, our historic preservation specialist from Heritage Architecture, Steve Avdikoff, and Debbie Griffin. The owner might be on the line, Jose Luis Aguirre Jimeno, as well as from my firm, Michael Larkin. They might all be on the line. It's hard to tell from here.
Thank you.
And do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Yes.
Yeah. I do.
Okay, great. So Stephen Advokoff is the next speaker.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, board members and staff. Steve Advokoff, Heritage Architectural Associates. We're the historic preservation consultant retained by the team. We put together the historic resource report. We're available for any questions you may have. We certainly concur and feel that the building is eligible and contributing and meets the criteria for the designation. I think the only reason that it was not previously designated was due to the age. Now we are, as Mr. Chairman noted, we are now nearly 60 years on with the data building. So with the contributing features that retain the original character that's there, the scale, the context, the massing, the fenestration, we concur that the building is eligible and support the nomination. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Nice to hear from you.
Likewise.
Okay. Anyone else?
There are no other members on Zoom wishing to speak at this time.
Daniel, good morning again.
Thank you. Daniel Serraldo on behalf of Miami Design Preservation League. We met with the applicants, and we are in support of the reclassification of the building to contributing in accordance with the city staff report recommendations. And in addition, we want to encourage the further study and reclassification of buildings within our historic districts. We know that there are many buildings that when MDPL and the city back in the 1979 went and listed it on the National Register, since then, there have been changes to the status over time. Even with the Versace Mansion, there was a whole thing with the Revere Hotel, which was on the site of the garden at the time, which had a lower age than would have been required. So I just wanted to reiterate, I know we sometimes disagree with the city, but we do think there's a difference between contributing and non-contributing, and we see here that there are even incentives for it. And so to the extent that this board can do the reclassifications in a larger scope, then that would probably help the property owners not having to hire teams every time, one by one. So we'd be happy to continue helping with that process. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Anyone else would like to speak? Okay, seeing none, let me
close public discussion, open to board discussion. Who would like to go first? Max, you want to go?
Yeah, I'm happy to go. I'm just trying to review my notes to see if there's something that wasn't covered. I feel like the preamble and the presentation covered a lot of the things that were on my mind. I share the staff concern about the below-grade parking, but I've also, you know, to be coherent and, you know, with my position in other meetings, I don't think that preservation and resilience are at odds with each other. I think these moving this building to contributing, you know, demonstrates leadership and how those considerations can move together. I did have some reservations about the why. I was kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop into why this proactive move, but I think the discussion about the incentives and sort of the perspective of the owner kind of clears that up, but I'm still kind of waiting in bated breath for what's next for this building. But I'm supportive and I appreciate the application. Thank you.
Anyone else? Barry?
Very supportive of the project, but I'd had a question in the report, and then Deb, you mentioned it about resiliency, future efforts, and how that would affect the access to the parking. So it just made me think in reference to raising streets, and then if so, the parking would end up being eliminated.
So the reference was more general, but yes, that would be a consideration. So Collins is a relatively high point in the city. There are currently no plans to raise the road or the sidewalks in this particular area. But that would be something to consider in the future, probably the very long-term future. And we see that as more of a benefit because we do not believe that the portion of the building that's just an open curb cut and driveway is characteristic or consistent with the character of the district. So that, you know, that was the one area of the building that we had some concern about with regard to its contributing status, but we do believe that the resiliency initiatives will actually foster a much more compatible building in terms of the pedestrian activity. So that could be filled in, that could be converted to some other type of non-habitable use for the building that would have more activity. The other, you know, initiatives that we often think about is, again, looking probably this to the mid to long-term future is the increase in rapid mass transit. The decrease of individual vehicle owners and the need for parking will probably continue to decline. We have seen a significant decline in the past 5 years within the city for a need for these types of parking areas. So we also believe that at some point in the mid to long-term future that it would not be a necessary use to have, you know, 12 cars parked underneath the building. And we see this as something that would benefit this particular building.
Thanks. But I'm in favor of the project. But is the project going to go forward as hotel, condo, or what?
Correct, hotel. Transient use.
Thank you.
Okay, Nancy? Nancy, you there?
Yes, I'm sorry, I'm mute. No, I'm fine with the whole presentation. Very important. Thank you.
Thank you. See, have we done everybody? Oh, not to slight Laura.
Thank you so much for the presentation. And I definitely agree it's consistent with, you know, the historic context of the district. Looking at the map, it's actually kind of in the heart of the district, so it'll be a great completion, I think, of that immediate area around that historic district. And it's great to see an applicant be, you know, proactive and really seeking, you know, the benefits of historic preservation. And I think, as you alluded to, most importantly, that historic preservation provides a sense of place, and it's so important for these these structures as they continue, as Jack kind of mentioned at the beginning, you know, those 60s buildings, to continue to preserve them as well, because they are important to the legacy of the city and the identity of Miami Beach. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, so we should have a motion.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Okay.
Let me call the roll. Mr. Litt?
Yes.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Finglass?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes. Congratulations.
Bravo to you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's funny. Jason wasn't laughing.
I'll bring my clown nose next time.
Okay, I guess we're moving on to the last regular application, and then following that we have one discussion item today. The next application is HPB 210465.
This is 360 Meridian Avenue. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for modifications to the north facade of the non-contributing multifamily building.
Okay, this is a pretty simple request. The existing building was built in 1968. It's a residential building of six stories. As Jake just described, the current proposal is very minor. It's limited to the north elevation. There's existing window openings. And the proposal is to convert those window openings into sliding glass doors. These areas of the building that will be demolished are located behind existing masonry railings, so it will be, you know, almost imperceivable, the change from the pedestrian point of view. It's important to note this is a condominium building, so the current request is for 9 out of those 20 windows. Staff has included a recommendation in the draft order that when additional units want to avail themselves of the same sliding door design, that they also be eligible to do that, and that the condition would allow that. So it's more of what staff would be recommending is the board approve it as somewhat of a master plan. We see this a lot with condominiums, where all of the units don't change necessarily windows and doors at the same time, that would occur over a period of years. And staff has no objection. We don't think it has any adverse impact on the building or the district, and we are recommending approval. Thank you.
Question, Debbie. I just glanced at this again because my memory wasn't too good on this. Are these going to be hurricane-proof?
Yes.
And the other window, the existing other windows are not, or are?
I'm not sure if any of them have been changed over time. I know there is a representative here for the applicant who could probably address that better. With condominium buildings, it's very difficult. We do see, on rare occasion, an entire condominium association changing all of the windows, but more frequently we see individual units coming in with individual window or door permits. So I'm not sure about the permit history of this particular building, if some of the windows have already been converted to impact resistant, but the representative can speak to that.
Hi. Good morning. I am Jerry Gonzalez. I am the president of 360 Meridian Condominium. And I'm here asking for a certificate of appropriateness for sliding glass windows on the balconies that don't currently have the sliding glass windows. Currently, we do have the A-line that does have sliding glass windows.
Before you begin, may I swear you in?
Sure.
Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Yes. And so what we want to do is just have the other balconies be the same as the A line, and I have some slides here. So the first slide, that's the those are the balcony that have the sliding glass windows, and what we want to do is have the remaining balconies. Next slide, these balconies here have them replace the windows that are existing now to sliding glass windows. And then finally, the third slide is the before and after of what we expect to occur over the next several months, next year or so, to get that done. And in regards to your question, sir, if I understood it, some of the balcony windows have been updated with hurricane windows, but the vast majority of the owners agreed that they prefer to have sliding glass windows. At the time, it was talked about, but we never went through the motions to go through the process. But it was determined based on obtaining all the votes that the vast majority, almost 90%, felt that this was a definite improvement. And that's basically is what our condo docs requires, that 67%, so we go way beyond that. We've got the votes necessary to move forward with that. And I'm just here to try to request that from you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions?
If the board members have no further questions, we can turn it over to the public. I do not see any members via Zoom wishing to speak at this time.
Hello, Daniel.
Okay, thank you. Daniel Serrato with Miami Design Preservation League. We support the proposal in accordance with the City of Miami Beach staff report recommendations. It's interesting to see a non-contributing building already be adaptively reused. I did just have a question, if the staff knows about, has this building already received its 40-year recertification, and or is that something part of the process that when they submit, is that checked before?
I would refer you to the building department. The city's building official and building department are the entity that handles the 40-year recertifications that are required by Miami-Dade County. The applicant is more than welcome to respond if he would like to.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. We're fortunate that this building is, of all the buildings in the area, when I compare it, I think this building is one of the better maintained buildings because we're on top of it. The 40-year and also the 15-year have both passed a certification, and we're always on top of it. I want the walls clean. I want the walkways clean. I want no rebar showing. So we're on top of it. We keep a tight ship, and we've got excellent owners and excellent renters there.
Thank you. Any other
questions? I just had a question, just for clarification. We were talking that this is not all units, right? This is just
currently
particular or a particular line of units.
What we're hoping is to get as many people on board early on so we get a better pricing. But realistically, it may take a group initially may come on board a few months later, maybe others might do it, but our intent is to get as many people as possible early on. I know the fourth floor right now is all, for the most part, I believe, all going to be redone, everyone on the fourth floor, and a couple on the top floor. So we've got 4 to 6 that at this point have agreed that they're ready to go.
Okay. And I don't think that I don't feel that the change is going to affect really how the building is viewed because of the balconies.
Right.
So I'm certainly in favor of this. And
thank you.
I think it's an improvement to your building.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Debbie, you should have a motion.
I don't see anyone else from the public, so you can make a motion.
Okay, we're going to make a motion. Who wants to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve it.
Okay. Do we have a second?
As presented.
Second.
Second. I'm going to call.
This goes for the full, the units that aren't.
This would be
here, right?
To allow them all to, over time, match. Okay.
Exactly.
I'm going to call the roll. Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Litt?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Finglas?
Yes.
Okay. Approved. Congratulations.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Chair. The last item on the agenda today, this morning, I can still say this morning, and it's the last regular item,
first.
is a discussion item regarding the Palm View neighborhood plan. In your package, we had included the presentation that was given to the Historic Preservation Board on November 10th, 2020, so it's been quite some time. I know I've had several meetings with Daniel Seraldo representing MDPL and the Palm View Neighborhood Association over the past several months, as requested by the Land Use Committee, to try and come up with some additional ideas for possible discussion. At this time, I don't have anything, and I don't see the members of the Palm View Neighborhood Association on the line, but at this point, I think it's critical that we wrap this up. This is a pending item at the city's Land Use Committee. The Planning Board did review and discuss the study as well. They have issued a recommendation to the Land Use Committee, and we would like to bring this back at their next available agenda. So I do want to point out that in November, the board had issued some preliminary recommendations. And I'm just going to read those in to refresh everyone. So going through the neighborhood study, which is broken up into different chapters for different disciplines, the board made the following recommendations. And this is from the November 2020. The board was not supportive of any proposal to de-designate the Palm View Historic District. The board is not supportive of the wholesale reclassification of all buildings constructed after 1929 as non-contributing. The board is supportive of exploring changes to the land development regulations that would incentivize the retention and restoration of contributing buildings within the Historic District. And the final recommendation was that the board was supportive of the proposed infrastructure upgrades that are also outlined in the neighborhood study. At that time, these were relatively general recommendations, and the board did request that staff bring this back so the board would have some additional time to make any more specific recommendations. You're not required to, but this would be really the last opportunity before the Land Use Committee hears it again if you have any additional recommendations to add.
Okay, thank you. Any board member would like to comment? We'll start off with Nancy.
I have to think about this first.
Okay, we'll come back to you.
Good.
I have a couple of thoughts if we could just start volleying. So there are a couple statements in the summary report that we got that I was just, and maybe it's an open and closed issue because of the discussion that we had last year and put forth those recommendations, but just to help understand the basis for the statement that the period of significance is not established. I'm looking at the page, it's summary of findings, historic preservation. It's stated like a fact, but I couldn't find the 2019 Palm View Neighborhood Master Plan to see if there was any analysis that went in, to back that up. Because when you look at the designation report, the period of significance is 1920s to 1960s. So I wasn't sure about where that came from or where the statement that says the Carl Fisher era of design and construction is the most significant, if that's something that's different than what's in the designation report. And the reason that it makes me somewhat uncomfortable is that there's, the designation report captures the rationale and why a district meets the criteria for designation. To me, that's not really a matter of convenience. It's a statement of fact about what the characteristics are, but there we might need to address if there's a change in values, maybe at this at the city level for what the purpose how the historic district fits into the current context of the city. If that's something that we need to revisit, but that doesn't seem to me as clearly what was happening here. It's just some statements presented as fact, and I was wondering if there's background on that.
Yeah, so this report was prepared by an outside consultant that the city hired. This was an independent examination of the neighborhood. And, I mean, I think you posed very good questions. You are correct that the designation report doesn't have a specific period of significance, but local historic designations, that's not a requirement. So it does range in terms of the contributing buildings from the 1920s all the way through to the the early 1960s. So the idea to kind of roll that back and modify the designation, the original designation, to limit the period of significance was the professional opinion of the consultant. I was not able to find a strong rationale for that decision. The consultant, unfortunately, she was with us for the November presentation, but she's no longer here. To your point, I was not able to determine a strong rationale for that recommendation myself.
Thanks, that's helpful. And this might be covered in the, you know, our previous feedback or recommendations, whatever we call those, but if the city sees value, you know, in this historic district's continued existence for the entire period of, if it's not a period of significance, but, you know, the period covered in the report, then, you know, that's just further, further rationale for the ongoing conversation that we've been having about incentives and city infrastructure to protect these homes so that there isn't so much of that tension between, homeowners understanding the contribution of their home to the district and to the city and what they perceive as the constraints or limitations on them.
And, I mean, what I would point out is that this board has the authority over classifications. So there is nothing that would currently prohibit a property owner from submitting an application to this board if they believe their property is incorrectly classified. They could currently come before this board. We have reduced noticing requirements for reclassifications and present their case to the board as to why they believe their classification should be modified, just like we saw, moments ago with the application on Collins Avenue. So that's still within the board's power. That is still within the right of any property owner to bring that to the city's attention and have us look at that.
I don't know. I last time I looked at this, or this last several times, I did not really understand the rationale for continually using the Carl Fisher so-called period. I don't think this should be, I don't think a study should be, the parameters should not be that way. It should be looking at everything for the value of all buildings, whether they contribute, not contribute, whatever their age. And I don't know why that was specified that way. And it's been a long time, and I see Daniel is still here. I was just curious if MDPL has any information or maybe new information since this has been discussed that might enlighten us as to the position of a preservation organization regarding this this study and any proposal that may come or should come from it.
Okay, sure. I'm happy to speak for a couple of minutes. So obviously MDPL, we have a serious concern about climate change and resiliency and its impact on Miami Beach. At the same time, we struggle with this issue of this neighborhood. It was a neighborhood where the residents came originally to designate, and now there's a group of residents that seem to want to undesignate. We really wanted to try to understand the specific tangible issues that they were facing in order to find how we could try to address those. One of the bigger issues we heard was about flood insurance rates and how they were rising. And so we actually took a deeper dive with some of the property owners there, and we looked at their flood insurance estimates, which were, for two of them, they were approaching $10,000 a year for a home. And we actually took it to another flood insurance provider who informed us that the estimates were improperly done. They were done for investment properties and not for single-family homes. So we were able to provide those owners with new estimates at $2,500 and not $10,000, which we think is a big positive out of this, this exercise. As far as the next step, and you know, there's now two groups actually. There's the one called the Neighborhood Association. There's another newer group called WeLovePalmView.com, and so you know there are people pro and against, and that's part of Miami Beach, and we have a very active community. At the same time, you know, we're not aware, and maybe Debbie could let us know if there were any applications to this board from the neighborhood that were denied, or, you know, I mean, there's a process here that most of the rest of the city follows, and we believe the process is a good one to go through the HP board. And then finally, I wanted to mention that we have an ongoing issue with some properties there that have a lot of violations. There's one in particular where the seawall has collapsed. And, you know, there's some properties that are deteriorating. And so we want to be there to support the residents. And we also, as MDPL, support the continued preservation. If anything, this area has become more beautiful over the years as we see other undesignated single-family neighborhoods being really completely kind of ripped apart and redeveloped. And one thing from the designation report that stood with me was how it talked about the continuum of 20th century single-family architecture, which I think as we see more of the redevelopment outside, this neighborhood will really continue to be that jewel if we can continue being proactive with the residents, addressing their concerns, because there are legitimate concerns. And we all want to make this a more resilient city, but we do feel like preservation can help with that and that it's not necessarily a hindrance. So I don't know if that answers your questions, Jack, but just wanted to provide an update. Thank
you.
Very good.
Thank you so much. It was Jack, very enlightening. Nancy.
Jack, you know, it seems to me that every time I come to a meeting, we hear the same thing from these same people. I was waiting to hear if Daniel had completed the survey of how many people are actually trying to kill the Palm View and get on with other things like demolishing or building taller buildings or whatever they're trying to do. I have yet to figure it out. I was the city commissioner who brought this to the table, I think it's about 20, 25 years ago. The entire community at that time was so supportive. They applauded it. They came to meetings. A lot of the buildings were upgraded. Everything was fine until all of this conversation started here at the HP board. They want to get rid of the designation, which is unheard of, unheard of. I think that we should just stop listening to that kind of rhetoric. And I would like to know how many of the many people who live there who you don't hear from, if they want to see their beautiful historic district destroyed because several people there have created this fight. And I am personally tired of listening to it. I don't think that this board should be encumbered every time they get a whim that they want to make a change and get rid of the designation. Whatever they want, I'd like to know if they are the majority of people or they're just a few complainers who are dissatisfied with living there and would love to demolish their building and create some high-rise that has no rhyme or reason. This is one of the finest little enclaves that I can remember from that far back. So that is my feeling about it. I don't know how long the rest of you want to continue listening to these people. We don't hear this from any other community. All we hear about from the other communities are how they want to expand what they have and repair it and let it move ahead as a historic place. That's what Miami Beach is now known for, and that's something that should be considered. And not just a handful of people who want to, they should want to sell their property and do something that doesn't belong there.
Thank you, Nancy. That brings up a question I was going to ask Debbie before she brought it up. This has come up so many times.
This will be the conclusion of this discussion item.
Okay.
At the Historic Preservation Board, the Land Use Committee will be considering it and discussing it at that level.
I think we should make a motion, if you would like, to resupport.
To affirm your previous recommendations.
To affirm the previous recommendations we made regarding the subject, so it ends our participation.
Can you review what the previous discussions came to? I don't know where the line stopped with the.
I'm sorry. You're breaking up a little bit. Can you say it again, please?
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I would just like to know what the previous, the conclusions of the previous discussions were.
Sure. I can, I'll read those in, right?
Just so I get a clue.
The previous recommendations of this board were to not support any proposal to de-designate the Palm View Historic District, to not support the wholesale reclassification of buildings constructed after 1929 to non-contributing. The board is supportive of exploring changes to the land development regulations that would incentivize the retention and restoration of contributing buildings within the Palm View Historic District. And the final recommendation was that the board is supportive of the proposed infrastructure upgrades that are outlined in the Palm View Neighborhood Plan. So those four recommendations were previously stated by the board. And the motion, was there a motion made to affirm? I'm not sure. The discussion is to reaffirm those four recommendations and transmit that to the Land Use Committee.
Has that happened? Or is that where it's stuck?
It's been pending in land use for quite some time, and I think that is because the Palm View Neighborhood Association had been reaching out to planning, who had been facilitating some further discussion between Palm View and the Miami Design Preservation League. And that is going back to the Land Use Committee, and I believe that they are, you know, going to take a look to see if the committee is going to make any recommendations to the full commission as to any of the action items in the neighborhood study document.
Has anything come back from the planning?
The planning board did review the study and did make a series of recommendations. Unfortunately, I don't have the planning board's recommendations. From my recollection, they weren't too far apart from what this board had recommended. I don't have specifically what the planning board's recommendation was. That is also being transmitted to the Land Use Committee.
Okay,
Nancy?
So, do we need to make a motion on this, or just?
It's up to you. At this point, you don't have to. This is a discussion item, but you're more than welcome to make a recommendation to reaffirm your previous recommendations or add in any new recommendations.
I think to close the book on this, it'd be nice to have a final motion.
You can make a motion, and your motion can include that the item F will be concluded.
I think we should.
Wait, hold on a minute, Nancy.
Okay. We're reaffirming if we wanted to add another thing that we're for. Like, do we feel comfortable with adding to our recommendations that the city continue to explore the resiliency district and design standards for resilient historic structures within those districts? Just thinking strategically, is that there are things that we are against with it, and then things that we would
It makes
for.
It appear we're for many things, too. Yeah. It doesn't hurt. It might help. So I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
And can you repeat that? I cannot hear.
That we would support or encourage the city to continue to explore the resiliency districts and design standards for historic structures in resiliency districts. It was part of the recommendations for Palmview.
Well, is that to include the Palmview continuing?
Yeah, it was in the neighborhood study.
Just generic as a neighborhood study?
It was
yes, it was, Max says, yes.
Yeah. Page 14.
She I don't think she has the stuff. Okay, but I think let's you want to add that? Okay, let's add that to our affirmation, if you'd be so kind.
I think it's very important that we do this. I was just in Charleston last week, and you know, I seemed to ask some questions of people that were looked upon like, what kind of stupid question is that? But from living here and sometimes being on this board, but I'm a lifelong resident of Miami Beach pretty much. Money talks, and in some areas money doesn't seem to talk as loud. And I think that I just can't imagine in Charleston that there would be a even discuss this discussion. So I'm supportive.
Okay, so that was a motion. Max made the motion? Or did we make a motion yet?
Recommending to add, and if we're good with that, I'll make the motion to affirm our recommendations with the one that we added today.
I'll second it.
Okay, and to conclude the item.
To conclude,
Okay, motion second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous, and thank you. We will make sure that that is included in the Land Use Committee update. Thank you. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair, for today.
I have one more question, which I will bring up every month, and Jason can tell me if it's not proper, which I'm sure he will. Do we have any update on the Port Deauville?
The only update I have for you is, I believe, the same update I provided at the last month's meeting, which is that the Deauville is currently set for trial in January.
But I've seen plans floating around with a local architect's name on them.
I am unfamiliar about that aspect, but just with respect to the litigation, there are motions that are pending, and the trial is scheduled for January currently.
For we non-attorneys, what is, I hate to be so ignorant, but what is the purpose of a trial? What are the potential outcomes of a trial? I'm not asking opinions. I'm just saying, where does it go? I mean, what this is taking an inordinate amount of time, and the more time that passes, the more damage is done to the complex.
Well, a lot of that is going to be determined based on the motions that have been filed to date in order to for the court to provide some guidance as to the path with which the trial is going to take and whether and how it can proceed with respect to the city's demolition by neglect ordinance.
Is this something that's going to take forever or 6 months or a year, or there's no way to know?
There is no way to know, but all I can say is litigation is a tedious and time-consuming process. That's why I came over to the transactional side.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could just respond to Mr. Klein's question. So the litigation that is currently pending right now does not preclude the property owners from working with the city and submitting an application to this board. So we have had a few very, you know, preliminary discussions. We have spoken with architects. And, you know, if they would like to come up with a solid proposal, they could submit an application for a certificate of appropriateness for, you know, very similar projects that you see all the time, partial demolition, restoration, and new additions for the site. So we will continue to work with them if they show interest in wanting to come up with a design to show before this board. So that's also continuing, and you know, we're hopeful that we'll see progress on that side.
And one more thing that brought up another light bulb in my mind. There's been no movement apparently on the property which is certified, which we allowed to be demolished and which was promised to be rebuilt on Lower North Bay Road. I forget the lady's name, but Delphine. That's now been gone for 2 years, and there seems to be no action.
The last time I looked, they did have a building permit for the project that the board approved, including the reconstruction. I can check the status of that building permit, but they were issued a full building permit. So at this point, they've met the criteria that's required from the board order to obtain the full building permit within that time frame.
They can continue to renew that forever, basically.
That's right? Up to the Florida Building Code has benchmarks for the extensions of building permits. This board and the planning department does not have jurisdiction over that.
So our role was finished there, basically.
Unless the permit becomes invalid for a particular reason, which could happen, then it would be subject to violation and could be required to return back to this board.
Yeah, because this is a very important issue because the time is against all of this, and we seemingly have no teeth. And this is a very bad example, I think, for others. It's a shame that we can't come to some happy solution to whatever problem exists. Well, I don't even know what the problem is, other than they haven't started. I wish them well, and I hope they can begin construction soon, because the longer it sits, I think it just leaves a very bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. Okay, anybody else have anything they want to bring up?
I do have a question in reference to the Deauville, and it seems this Lower North Bay Road kind of is connected there, that they could just kind of languish as well. But and I wish I knew where I saw this rendering and plan. I don't know.
I know
there wasn't
where
any
saw
secret
it.
Spot I can.
I know where you. I think I know where you saw it, because I was sent the same drawing. I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn. I guess I could get in trouble, but I know I saw this. It was sent to me in an email, and I forget who sent it to me. It was a drawing of the Deauville property with a tower designed by, I guess I shouldn't say, that I think was older as opposed to newer, and it was sent. I don't know why it was sent to me, but it was. And I don't remember who sent it, but it was a big white tower on top of the convention center, or in placement of the convention center. And that disturbed me because I didn't know what that had to do with the current status.
So I was wondering.
Well, I don't know what you saw, because I wasn't, you know, copied on the same email you received, but you know, previously there were large projects approved for this site. So I don't know if you saw the older one. I think the last approval was in 2015, and I could be wrong about that, but I think it was 2015. There was a tower addition. I believe it was a 200-foot tower addition that was approved for the site, which also included a significant amount of restoration and some partial demolition. That project has expired, So they couldn't, you know, pull a building permit for that if they wanted to. Now they would have to return to this board. There are, you know, there's other ideas that they've, you know, the owners and a few different architects, to be honest with you, have kind of approached the city about. Again, there's nothing prohibiting them from submitting a formal application or plans for staff to review and comment on and bring to this board. But that just hasn't occurred. We're going to do everything in our power to continue the dialogue and working with the owners, because our only goal is to get this building back online, not only because it's an incredible historic property, but also the current situation is having a severely negative impact on the surrounding historic district, which includes other hotel properties, it includes residential properties. So it's having a dire impact on that area, and so we are just going to continue working with them, and hopefully we will see at some point in the not-too-distant future a proposal that we can bring to the board.
Is there anything proactively we can do to help? No, I guess the answer is no. No.
No, and you know, until there is an application submitted to the board, you know, you should just, you know,
Daniel,
wait for something that would be formally before you would, you know, make any comments. That's my only recommendation.
But enlighten us.
Mr. Chair, no, I just want to say that this board has done a lot proactively as far as, first off, the Deauville was listed on the Florida Trust most endangered list a couple years back. And now we have the city of Miami Beach for the first time ever, as far as I'm aware, taking their full legal might towards the demolition by neglect ordinance. So, you know, as much as it might seem to people like, oh, things aren't going fast as we would like, there's a tremendous amount of resources that are going into this. And I think we have to continue to support what the city's doing and encourage the owners to do the right thing. And hopefully we'll have a good outcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else have anything they want?
The only other thing I have. Sorry. So you're grabbing your papers.
There's a lot going on under that bonnet, I say.
I'm freezing. I need a blanket. The band show.
That's a great positive way to end the meeting. The designation report will be presented to the board at the September meeting. We are also working, the Rhythm Foundation and Don Worth reached out to me. They're having a celebration. I think it's I don't know what anniversary, but it's a large celebration. And so what we're trying to do is get it to you in September, also get the designation to the planning board in September. So by November, we potentially could have our next historic site at second reading approved by the city commission. So we're working on, you know, as fast as we can, and it's an exciting thing, and I think it's something that the city can really be proud of.
Thank you. So I think Nancy should have the last word, since she's been brave in New York since March. We should let her have the last word. Nancy.
I think Nancy left.
Passes.
No more Nancy. Okay. So she has left the building. Do we have a motion to adjourn? Yes, all those in favor. Okay, see you in September. Have a wonderful August break.
You
see
too.
You soon. Bye.